You're listening to Dig Deep on KEXE KBXE. We continue our conversation now about impeachment. We're staying in the past, though. We're talking more about presidents like Andrew Johnson and Nixon and Clinton. Should we move right into talking about Andrew Johnson?
Sure.
1868 is when he was impeached. What was going on in the country right then?
Oh, not
anything.
It was
super quiet.
Yeah, no big deal.
Cash time.
So, obviously, we're coming out of the Civil War. President Lincoln has been assassinated, the first United States president to ever be assassinated. And, of course, the Civil War, a highly divisive time in our history. And this is Reconstruction. This is the period after the Civil War. The Unions won the war, occupied the South. And this liberation of slaves who had never had freedom on American soil in their whole cultural history. And in the middle of this, we had a power struggle over who was going to run the country, who was really going to run these now old states coming back into the Union. How are we going to let these states back in the Union? What would we do to them?
I think it's important to add here, too. We tend to look at these through modern lenses, the freedom of slaves being a huge one. Obviously, that's very important. But a big part of the debate at the time, or the conversation at the time, was destroying the what we would just call the aristocracy-based land distribution power system of the South. The South was a place that was largely driven by these rich aristocratic families who owned lots of land and subjugated African-American slaves and really held this kind of revered place. And the idea was we're gonna break this.
Right. It was almost a feudal system where you had an overseer class and then a slave class. And the slave class was very large. Overseer class was smaller and held in like a caste system that was formed. And it was and in a lot of ways similar to old medieval European
I think a caste
feudalism.
System is the best way to describe it. Yeah.
And this was at the root of the cultural divide that spurred on the Civil War. I've been able to do some reading because one of my research subjects, his father, fought in the Civil War. And a lot of Union soldiers went into that war unconcerned with slavery. They had no... I'm reading a man's letters in his own handwriting where he says, I didn't go into this war to fight for black people. I had no concern for it. But in going to the South and seeing the conditions, a lot of soldiers were turned on the issue and realized what a bad deal it was and how horrible it was. So, yeah, there is this big desire, especially among the Republican majority of the North, the Northern legislators and Northern Democrats to some extent, this idea of, well, we have to smash this old system and do something better. And in the middle of this, Lincoln, the architect of the Emancipation Proclamation, the architect of the constitutional amendment freeing people in general.
The guy whose election started the Civil War.
Correct, and whose re-election marked
the affirmation
and the victorious turn of it. Yeah. And then he gets shot and killed by a pro-slavery actor who didn't like how the Civil War turned out. And his vice president, in one of these historical moments that's like, how did this happen? Well, in order to promote unity during the re-election campaign, he wanted Republicans and Democrats in the North to be united for the Civil War, for finishing the war. And so he appoints one of the only senators from a Southern state who remained loyal to the Union, Andrew Johnson, a Southern Democrat, a slave-owning conservative Southern Democrat, and he says, in a spirit of unity, I'm going to name Andrew Johnson into this unity ticket. I think it was called the National Unity Ticket or something. And so the Republican Lincoln ran with the Democrat Johnson. And of course, the assumption was Johnson is never going to see the light of day. He's never going to be president.
He's just a figurehead. Go to funerals and,
barely that, you know. And of course, historical hindsight being 2020, you can look back and say, woo, Lincoln got shot. And so Andrew Johnson becomes the president of the United States and inherits Lincoln's cabinet, inherits Lincoln's government, and inherits a very Republican Congress, extremely, because there's no Southern states in the Congress. And yeah.
So now all of a sudden, Andrew Johnson is the presider. And Andrew Johnson is supposed to preside over the execution of this strategy, the execution of a strategy to basically break the aristocracy of the South. And that is going to be done through the War Department. You've got the Southern states not represented in Congress, all Republicans in Congress, and they're saying, go forth and do this. And Andrew Johnson's like, I don't want to do it. I don't like this. I don't like these ideas. And he went so far as to start dismissing cabinet members who were carrying out the will of Congress. These cabinet members act, in a sense, under the president, but they also act independently. They have their own charge. And the War Department was supposed to go in and do like radical crazy things, like make sure slaves were actually freed and could vote in elections and could,
and
you know,
not be killed in the street.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they're down there doing this. And Andrew Johnson's like, yeah, you know, I don't like, I'm not into that. So there's this tension in the executive branch. And it came down to, ultimately, Johnson started to dismiss people. He dismissed Edwin Stanton.
Who refused to leave
and went so far as to, like, sleep in his office.
He locked himself in his office.
Not evacuate the office. And Congress passed laws that said, if we had to approve your appointee, you're not allowed to dismiss them without us approving it. That's not in the Constitution, but they passed that.
But they offered their support to Stanton, who was the architect of the War Department during the Civil War, who had proven himself a brilliant strategist in running that department, and who was committed to Lincoln's cause, which is the emancipation. Actually, he didn't start out that way, but he had bought into Lincoln's agenda to free slaves, and also. There were other things happening while this War Department was going on. Congress was passing some very, you know, I won't say run-of-the-mill, but they were passing things like funding to help educate slaves or to find ways for former slaves to find work, emancipated people, get them acclimated into society.
They were sending people down there just to create law and order. I mean,
because you had a
place that had been thoroughly defeated in war. I mean, in some places burned to the ground.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, there was a need for that.
And so even the funding to do those things was being vetoed by President Johnson. And he's trying to get rid of Stanton. He appoints his own Secretary of War.
First, he appointed Grant. What happened was there was like a, what we I think would today call a recess appointment. When Congress isn't in session, you can like do certain things. And he tried that trick. And then Congress comes back and says, no, you can't do that. And so Grant actually leaves and says, I'm sorry, I don't want to get in the middle of this.
Right.
And then they, he basically like pushes through his own guy. And there's this constitutional crisis because you've got Stanton who won't leave his office to go to the bathroom even because, you know, he's going to lose his place. If he leaves, they're going to kick him out.
Right.
And you have this standoff.
Right. And it is a standoff. And it's truly the execution of American policy in one of the most trying times in our history. How do you run a government? How do you run a military when Congress clearly wants one thing and even the bureaucrats in the government want that policy? And then you have a president who is really doing his own thing, going a whole different direction. And not an elected president, but one that was filling in for this very tragic first time ever presidential assassination.
That's Aaron Brown, our liberal commentator for Dig Deep on KEXE, KBXE. And Chuck Marone continues this conversation on impeachment. We're talking about President Andrew Johnson, who took over after President Lincoln was assassinated in 1868, and his impeachment.
So you get 11 articles of impeachment. You dismissed Edward Stanton when the Senate didn't say you could. You appointed someone new, even though we said you couldn't. You conspired to unlawfully prevent Stanton from coming back into office. And then the last two are my favorite. Making three speeches with intent to bring into disgrace, ridicule, hatred, and contempt the Congress. And then 11th is bring disgrace and ridicule to the presidency. And so you look and they're like, we can't work. You're not working with us. You are beneath us in the pecking order here. We, Congress, get to say what is going to happen. And you're not faithfully executing what we've told you to do. We're going to remove you.
And the contemporary context is kind of interesting, too, because Johnson was, in his time, in that moment, considered kind of a buffoon by his contemporaries. He was, if you think U.S. Grant faced accusations of public drunkenness, Andrew Johnson probably more often was publicly intoxicated. There was a whole belief that at the second inauguration, Lincoln's second inauguration, Johnson's first inauguration as vice president, that he was loaded.
Right.
And so there's all of these things happening politically that are at the root of this, but also these members of Congress and senators are just aghast that this man got to be president at this critical time in history and isn't even doing the thing we fought the war to do. And so it was an overwhelming sense that something had to give.
So he's impeached.
So those are considered high crimes and misdemeanors, part of that list that you read, does it have to do with the, you said mm-hmm. in our first segment you were talking about that the Constitution includes both the high crimes and misdemeanors and also politics.
Well, is it a crime to appoint someone when the Congress says you can't? I mean, is that a crime? I don't know. What's clear is that there was a debate over who had the power. And Johnson was saying, I don't have to listen to you. I'm going to do this my way. And the Congress is saying, no, you have to do it this way. We're the Congress. We have the power. And ultimately, the Congress said, if you're not going to do it, we're going to remove you from office. So this is, I think we would call this a constitutional crisis. I think maybe that is a good way to frame it. Actually, the Constitution's pretty clear. The Congress does have the power to remove the president if they don't like what the president's doing, including bringing disgrace and ridicule the presidency. I mean, that was one of the articles of impeachment.
11. Do you know what the public thought at the time?
Depends on where you were in the country, you know. And the
South loved Johnson. And they're like, he's the lawful president. Stick up for him, you know, that kind of thing. The North was appalled because they're like, we fought this war. Let's finish this thing.
There's also this tricky business of Lincoln's legacy after he died. And so if you were an abolitionist in Massachusetts and Lincoln died, the legacy of Lincoln is for the freedom of black people to become citizens and to vote and to become members in good standing of American society. But if you were in the South or in the border states and Lincoln dies, your takeaway is Lincoln was a magnanimous individual who appointed a Southern Democrat to be his vice president who didn't want to punish the South too harshly. And so that's the legacy you need to carry on. That means let those Southern states do what they want. It's freedom. It's America. States' rights. And so that...
Sure, we'll free the slaves.
Right.
If we have to, but...
Yeah. And we'll still create a system where they're subjugated and keep them from voting. And but that's just our business. Why are you bothering
it's
us
our
about
way
that?
Of life.
Yeah, it's our way of life.
Don't impose your way of life.
Right.
On us.
And so both arguments seem like Lincoln's behind them. You know, it seems like Lincoln's legacy is on your side. And that was unresolved and arguably is still unresolved in a lot of ways. What was Lincoln's true legacy? But in this current events of late 1860s, you know, you had all of these things, like an actual constitutional crisis, who's in charge, an actual political partisan debate between the same factions that had already been fighting for decades, and they even fought a war just recently. And then you have this president who's nobody knows, has kind of came out of nowhere, who is rumored to be kind of a drunken buffoon and certainly is stubborn, but has his supporters and people who love him. And so all of this comes to a head, and it goes through the House. It passes the House. It goes to the Senate for a trial, the first time in history.
Andrew Johnson was impeached.
He was impeached. And that's what impeachment means. It's a process. He's not removed from office unless that is the final outcome of impeachment, which is not necessarily the case. That was the vote in the end, whether or not to convict Johnson. You need a two-thirds majority. And of course, our founders were nothing if not, they didn't want just simple majority on big things. They wanted super majorities. They wanted two-thirds majorities. So two-thirds of the Senate have to vote to convict, which means some Democrats have to support this for it to happen. And yes, the Democrats were the conservatives and the Republicans were the liberals, broadly speaking, at the time. But whatever, the two parties have to somewhat agree on this. It comes down to that final moment, and Andrew Johnson is acquitted by one singular vote in the United States Senate.
Amidst what clearly were actual payout bribes.
Yeah.
To make this happen?
Credible accusations of bribes were exchanged, and it was very, very problematic.
And also,
problematic.
You had Johnson basically relent and say, I will follow the Congress. So, I mean, the actual constitutional crisis part of this was in some ways resolved by the fact that Johnson became a little more contrite towards the very end, saying, mm-hmm. okay, maybe I overstepped my bounds and I'll do this a little bit differently now.
So right. he continued in his presidency for a couple years? Or
not
a
even.
Year and a half?
There was an election that fall.
Okay.
And that's when Ulysses S. Grant was elected president, the Republican, who then carried on more of the Republican policies. But you could argue that the Reconstruction period could have been handled much better had it started better. And you could argue the historical what-ifs. You know, if Lincoln had lived, what would he have really done? Would it have been different than Johnson? It almost certainly would have been different than Johnson.
Absolutely. And you had 3 years, and a half years of ineffective administration of Reconstruction because Johnson basically opposed it.
It's Dig Deep. More on impeachment in our next segment. That's Chuck Marone along with Aaron Brown. Thanks for tuning in. Dig Deep is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the Citizens of Minnesota. This conversation will be available later today through the podcast and on our website, kaxe.org. And this weekend, you will hear a full hour of conversation on impeachment with Chuck and Aaron on Dig Deep on Sunday at 9 o'clock. And don't forget to join us at the Dig Deep event, Talking Strong Towns, on Tuesday, December 10th at the Rife Center. It's free and open to the public. A community conversation begins at 7 o'clock.